this afternoon and part of what sounds like an amazing couple of days that you've had. It sounds like it was a very exciting and quite energizing event. The little bit that I've just experienced was certainly testament to that. So thank you, Guy. That was just an awesome story, and we'll draw some connections to it as I go through. So this is a really important topic to us. I might be a bit extreme if I say it's a crusade, but to a degree it is. Because to us, we're owners of small to medium-sized enterprises get, their energy and their advice when they're trying to overcome some things that they're faced with, either in the form of an issue or in an opportunity, is really important, and we think some work needs to be done here. Just to pick up what Craig said in the introduction, for those of you that don't know the Ice House particularly well, we are an organization that's celebrating 17 years this year, doing what we do with entrepreneurs at the very early stages of their journeys, from an idea, like we just heard Guy talk about, to commercializing that idea and taking it to the world. So we work with businesses at that stage and individuals at that stage, through to more established owners of more established businesses who are on that, journey of a business. But again, thinking about how do I take my business from where it is to where I want it to go, and what does that mean for me in terms of the changes that I need to make sure that I continue to be the biggest enabler of growth in my business. All right? So, slides. So the purpose of the time that I've got today is to try and position and introduce the concept of governance in small to medium-sized businesses, because its origins were not there. And so what do we mean when we talk about wisdom and advice and governance, and what does that mean for you and your business? Underpinning everything we do in the Ice House is this concept of three circles. And if you've heard me or anyone else talk from the Ice House, you may have heard this before. But what's different about what we do is that we get that it's personal, right? We understand that there's a lot that you need to know and maybe know more of that relates to your business. But as important to that is the understanding you have of you in your business. What is the role you play now? What is the role you need to play at the different transition points in your business when you might realize that what got you here won't get you there? Right? And then, really personal, we get that it's about you. So a lot of what you just heard from Guy, is about the personal vision and dream he had to make something that was in his head become a reality, right? And that grit, that pure passion and perseverance that's required to go 6 years with that vision, 2 years of which he had to keep it a secret. Well, I couldn't do it, Guy. So you'll see that this topic hits across all three of those circles. Now, lest we think that this whole startup to established owner-managed journey is just about the entrepreneurship, I want to just dispel potentially a myth. Because the Ice House, through our journey, has learned that, yes, it is about spontaneity and opportunism on the entrepreneurial side, but it's about discipline, right? It's about disciplined entrepreneurship. It's a contact sport, right? And the money is made in the collision, right? Now, money matters. Whether you are running a business for the sole purpose of making money, or whether money is a means to an end, rather than an end in and of itself, as many social enterprises will have as a goal, the money's made in the collision. You've got to have those things that are around discipline, the systems and the processes and the reflection and the planning, the people, the accountability, and advice. And we're going to come back to the advice piece because that's what today's about. And it's where that meets the kind of opportunity, the flexibility, the adaptability, the willingness to take risks, and the ability to see a bigger picture. All right, so it's both. It's a both and, not an either or. So what does governance really mean? And this is an Institute of Directors definition. I think the New Zealand Institute of Directors is trying really hard to be more and more relevant outside of corporates. And so we're trying to help them a little bit with that journey. But when they talk about what governance really means, this gets to where it came from, which was, to ensure that the board helps to ensure the company is well run, right, well governed, so that the shareholder value can be maximized and there's no funny business going on. In the context of a small business, it's about perspective. Okay? It's about how do you know where the business is now, where it's going, and what's needed to get there, and how do you get perspective? Because with the best will in the world, when your business is this close, right, you sometimes can't see the wood for the trees, right? What we know is there's some unspoken thoughts of owner managers about your business. There are times in all, for those of you in the room who are owners, and even if you're not, there are times in your head where sometimes we're going gangbusters, but there's just so much chaos. I think we're doing the right things, but how can I be sure? I believe I could do well in other markets, but there are many that have tried and failed. And do I want to be just another one of those? So those are some of the questions, those unspoken thoughts that run around in the heads of owner managers about the business. Then what about you in the business? Right? What are some of the unspoken thoughts of owner managers about you in your business? How do I deal with people who've been loyal from the beginning but are not growing with the company? That's hard. Am I good enough to run the company going forward? And if I am, how could I do better? We should be using management practices more than an entrepreneur and less than a corporate, but what are they? How do I know? This is particularly true if you've grown up inside your business, right? And then as I promised, the third circle is some unspoken thoughts of owner managers about you. Right? Who do I trust? How do I go about thinking about the business beyond me? We put so much energy and effort into building great businesses, and we don't plan enough beyond ourselves. And some of that is because we can't overcome the view of who am I if not the business, right? And therefore, we put at risk everything we've worked so hard to create because we don't think forward enough. My lifestyle is lousy. I can't find the balance. Now, work-life balance is an interesting thing in an owner-managed business because work and life are not as distinct as they are if you work for someone else, right? But you still want to have a sense of balance so that you can do the things that are important to you outside of running the business. And when a problem arises, who can I turn to? Who can I turn to? Now, the problem is that often these thoughts are outside your comfort zone, right? And they're in your blind zone because you don't know what you don't know. So how do you overcome? And I'll go back to the comment about the origins of governance. And this has been a puzzle for us for a little while now as we try and make sense of this and give good advice around what this should look like in owner-managed small to medium-sized businesses. Because the origins of governance were where the investors and the investment were separate. Right? And the directors were appointed to monitor the investment, the company, on behalf of its investors. But owner managers aren't separate. You're in the game. So your need isn't oversight. Rather, what you need is wise advice on matters of which you don't know as much as you need to or should. But of which the consequences are quite significant. So a board or an advisor can be an excellent forum for the exchange of advice, right? And for giving perspective where we sometimes really struggle to get it on our own. The problem is that owner-managers are often threatened by the thought of a board or of even exposing themselves to somebody outside of their circle. Right? They fear they'll see the numbers in me. Right? It's tempting to stay with the tried and true trifecta of the accountant, the lawyer, the banker, and there is nothing wrong with those trusted advisors, but they are not independent. Right? Creating a board or an advisory relationship where there's truly independent directors is easy to put off, particularly if you have good functioning relationships with that trifecta. So often, owner-managers appoint a board that doesn't, and I know there's a typo up there, that does not make them toe the line, nor does the owner make the board earn their keep. And both are really important. Don't bother bringing in advisors, putting in place a board if you have no intention of heeding their advice. Right? You're wasting your time and you're wasting their time. So make sure you bring someone in or someone's in who are going to make you toe the line and make sure they earn their keep. The best advisors know before you when they've passed their use-by date. And they'll be the ones coming to you saying, I think my job here is done. I've added as much value as I can. Let's think about what you need next. If I can help you find that, great. But it's time for me to move on and for you to move on. Right. Now, and then that last comment, which gives us another, sort of reason for pause, is that there's some research that's been done, not us, we didn't do it, but some research that's been done that says 75% of New Zealand SME boards are patsy. And what that means is they're absent of any independent person or voice. Okay? So someone who's truly there to do right by the business, no matter what that is, with no personal or vested, stake in the outcome. So, you've got some choices. You can get engaged before you get married, where advisory comes. You can decide before I make the commitment that setting up a formal board of directors, that maybe I'm just going to dip my toe in the water and look for an advisor or a mentor, and you may already have that. But in all three of these cases, whether it be formal director, whether it be advisor, or whether it be a mentor, my encouragement to you is to make sure that there's a formalized or structured nature to the way you engage them, right? Not just a chat every once in a while. Right? So that goes back to having them there to hold you account and you making sure they're earning their keep. So this is some of the real tricky stuff in terms of where an external perspective adds value, a perspective that helps to overcome at times. Right? Family friction. Right? It is not uncommon for advisors or directors in owner-managed small to medium-sized enterprises to find themselves doing more relationship management than they might in a typical corporate structure because of family factions and frictions. Right? So what the value they add is they're able to focus on what's best for the company, right, and not be clouded by the emotional family ties and loyalties. Perspective. Succession planning. They can offer an impartial and balanced advice on succession planning, especially if the CEO owner needs to retire. Right? And that, the day will come where that may be a conversation that needs to be had. It may mean, however, that the owner needs to be gently told that a family member may not be the best person to be the next CEO, and that bringing someone in from the outside might be best for the company and also to preserve the family's wealth. So bringing in a CEO guy, you know, at a certain point was clearly a conscious decision on your part to bring someone in who could, you know, provide a perspective and genuinely do a role that needed to be done in the next phase of the growth of the business. Reporting lines, it can be really challenging for employees to report to family members whose, you know, relation is the CEO or owner. So again, you know, an external perspective can add some real value here in terms of, you know, being able to provide, you know, and question management even if they are family. Risk. Bring a different perspective to the table. They may see potential risks, problems, or opportunities that may not be obvious to people in the business who've been running the family business in a particular way for a number of years. Right. Strategic direction. They can be there to think strategically and not focus or be in any way impeded by the day-to-day of the business. Right. They'll want to review the company's goals, think about where they want to go, understand the environment, the challenges, risks, and the opportunities facing it, and be able to contribute and encourage in terms of the development of a strategy that figures out what's needed and then driving the business in that direction. And ultimately, they can provide a skill set that's missing. Right? And I'll come back to this when I talk about how do you decide what you need. But good governance or good advisory relationships in small to medium-sized businesses is about, you know, keeping decision-making open and transparent, right? And having some independence means that management has to justify its actions to somebody, right? It's that mirror that gets held up, the bright light that gets shone on, and sometimes the kick in the backside that gets things moving. Now, I'm not going to belabor this, but it's interesting that the interface between governance in SMEs and management is flexing, right? It's not fixed. It flexes according to the needs and capabilities of each business. So if you're looking for a prescription here in terms of how this should work, I'm not going to give you one, because it's always a little bit different. You'll hear often that governance is about strategy and resourcing strategy and monitoring performance. And in a lot of businesses, it is. And management's about the execution of that strategy, the establishment of a senior team in some form or another, and then the kind of management meeting type and frequency. That's the operational side of the business. And somewhere in that middle bit, that interface, that gray area, you know, is the flex. Right. Some boards get more involved than others in business planning, in organization design, and senior management remuneration, and in, you know, the chairman and CEO relationship can flex. Right. So unfortunately, there's no prescriptive rule here. You've got to figure out what's right for you and what's right for your business. If you have a board or you form a board, the key member is the chair. Right, and if you've only got one, then, you know, independent person, then this, you know, then and you call them or think of them as a chair, you know, this is the important one. And there's some work done by a couple of guys, Alvarez and Marcel, wrote a book called What Makes an Exceptional Chairman, and we see some relevance, even though their work related mostly to larger corporates and their boards, but this is as relevant, right? They've got five distinguishing behaviors. They understand deeply the business. Right? They do not necessarily need to be industry experts. You know your industry, but they understand the business. They're future orientated. Right? They're not interested in looking in the rearview mirror, only in as much as it teaches us some things. They've got their eye on the future. They build and they get the most out of others if there's more than one person on the board. They have a trusting relationship with the owner, Now that is tricky. And I was just talking to Josh before I came up here. And, you know, in New Zealand, we have this issue around being able to have really good contentious debate. If you couldn't tell by my somewhat confused accent, I was born and raised in the United States. We do not have a problem in the US with contentious debate, right? And that's a good thing and a bad thing. But in the context of businesses, contentious debate is a really good thing, right? Just because someone doesn't like your idea doesn't mean they don't like you. And we have to get over ourselves, right? And be prepared for people to debate with us when they don't think what we're, you know, what we're putting forward is right. Because better decisions get made, right? And so trusting relationships, and particularly in the context of a good advisor or director or mentor, are ones where there is where there's the ability to challenge and be challenged, right? And the chair can make tough decisions, right? They're prepared to really make tough decisions and help you to do the same. So the distinction between a trusted advisor and a chairman is that the chairman often has moved inside the tent, so to speak. Right? They're more inside the business, not, remember going back to my other slide, not in the, you know, involved in the day-to-day operations, but you don't see as big a distinction between, you know, where they sit. Like to think about the role in this context as an independent business partner. Now, the partner you choose depends on the capability of the business and what you need. So just like the discipline that you put in when you're trying to figure out that there's a role in the business that you're recruiting for, you think about, well, what are the skills and the experience, the attributes that you're looking for in an employee? It's the same discipline when you think about, well, what are the attributes and skills and experience that I need for someone to do this role? And like I said before, think about what you're good at and think about what you're not good at, right? Think about what you're good at and think about what you're not good at and what your senior team is good at and what they're not good at. Think about where you're going and what the business needs, where it's going, not where it's been, and where are the gaps? And how could you use a role like this to fill those gaps? In our early days in the Ice House, we used to pander to the, you know, to the sort of view when someone would come to us and say, you know, I want somebody who's run a business like mine. You know, I want somebody like me, you know, who's run a business like mine. And we'd say, oh, okay, we'll go and find you someone like that. And now we say, well, that might be what you want. But what you need is actually someone who's run a much bigger business than yours, a much more complicated business than yours, a business that's where you're going, not where you are. Right? So think about that. Think about the capability that they need. Think about the industry know-how. They may or may not need it. If you're in a particular industry, sometimes industry experience is really important and sometimes it's not. And then think about their functional strengths. Do you need, you know, is your organization a little weak in any of the functions, sales, marketing, operations? Do they need to have some specific in-market experience? So that could be geography, depending on where you're going. But within this matrix, there's a way forward around, you know, how do you find the right partner and align them with you and your business? So, what I want you to leave thinking about this afternoon is what outside role would enable a significant change and or improvement for you and your company. I want you to think about describing the person. And it's not just about their skills and experience, their functional capability. Right? What kind of person will work well with you and with your business? How would you go about getting that person? And when I ask you if you've got any questions, maybe that's going to be one of the questions. And why would that person accept the role? You've got to be compelling. Just like when you interview people to work for you as employees, in this case it's the same. You're not the only one doing the interviewing. Right? Why would someone want to do this role for you? You've got to be, you know, kind of compelling around that. And then what will you pay? Sometimes you can get people mentoring you, you know, and advising you, and they're doing it for love, not money. But more often than not, when you formalize this and you put some more structure in place, you got a plan to pay. All right. And so what does that look like? More questions to sort of wrap up with. How satisfied are you right now with the wisdom and the advice and the governance that you have in and around your business? Now, being here in a room like this over a couple of days, I would suggest you're probably better than most at putting yourself in environments where you might be able to soak up some knowledge and some experience and some expertise from other people, and keep doing that. All right. Guy said before, failure is one of the ways he's been able to learn, and I couldn't agree more. It's a lot less expensive, though, to learn from someone else's mistakes than it is to have to make them yourself. So if somebody's already made the mistakes, then how can you learn from those without having to make them yourself? And sometimes that's also the value you get when you get this governance advisory, you know, mentorship thing right. Because they'll bring experiences, good, bad, and ugly. Right. So what might you do about it? If the answer to the first question is, not that satisfied, then what can you do about it? Where can you seek perspective and advice? From whom? Should I create an advisory board? Should I create or change a formal board? And our view would be that the trusted advisor or the chair solution is not the traditional approach to governance. Not in your world if you're an owner of a small to medium-sized enterprise. But it might be the better answer for an owner-managed businesses. So the idea of a trusted advisor or a chair versus a formal board, you know, governance-wise, might be the right answer for you guys. Questions? Questions?
So how does the ice house work in terms?
I can repeat.
Sorry. Hello? How does the ice house work in terms of this for those who are wanting to take this further? Is that something they can approach you about, or do they need to do it on their own?
You don't need to do it on your own. So yes, you can approach us. We have different ways that we handle. We've got quite a vast network, and so sometimes it's just pointing people in the right direction, you know, making an introduction, saying this person might be useful, and that's all we do, just make an introduction. In some cases, there's people that work with us who work through us in advisory relationships with customers. And so the ICE House is the facilitator of that. The commercial arrangement is through us, you know, and that varies. So we are one place you could come and say, you know, do you have somebody in your network who might be useful to me? This is what I'm looking for, or this is where I am. Similarly, places like the Institute of Directors, there are a couple of other organizations, I think one's called Appoint Better Boards. So there are a few organizations around, you know, that do this, you know, specifically. And then just approach your network and sit every once in a while and think, you know, I'd really, really love to have on my board or to have an advisory relationship, it's so-and-so. And then you know what you do? Go and ask them. Right? Nothing ventured, nothing gained. All they can do is say no. I don't have time. Right? But, you know, often that you know, there's some really great people that are just out there that, you know, are quite flattered to be asked. And when the problem is we just don't ask. 22 seconds and counting. Any other questions?
I'll have a question. So you've been in an environment like this. there's been a lot of inspiration. There's been a lot of things that nuggets that we've caught, and we're going, oh, I want to go back and change that. The board's not in this room. How do you take them on a journey of, you know, changing, I guess, habits, the routine of what has been done, and actually get them to go on that journey? Like a couple of quick.
Yeah, so Craig, are you talking about in examples where there is a board already in place?
Yeah, where there's already a board.
Mm. So, you know, at the end of the day, this is the beauty of an owner-managed business versus a corporate, because it's up to you, right? Your board, whilst they're the, if you have one that already exists, their role is to, you know, to be crowning the business king all the time, or queen, all the time, and helping you to make sure that you're, you know, doing everything you need to do to be as good as you can be, right? And if they're not, then you have to have a courageous conversation, right? Bravery and courage, right? If they are not doing the job that you need to have them do, you need to tell them. Now, that doesn't mean you need to change them, because they may not know. I've said before, you know, people do or don't do things for two reasons, in my opinion. They can't or they won't, right? If they can't, it's because they're not able, so they don't have the skills that you need them to have to help you, you know, in terms of where you're going, in which case you might change them because you need people with different skills or different experience or whatever. But if they won't, because they're not motivated, then again, how do you create a, you know, a situation where they understand better how they can contribute more, and you know, and then they refocus and they lift the game. All right.
Well, let's everybody put our hands together and just thank Liz so much.
Thank you so much.
Come on, wasn't that insightful? Really helpful. You know, I think for a number of people, you know, I just felt like it's kind of that, it's a bit of a kick going, come on, don't stay where you are. Yeah. Come on, the what's going to actually get us to another level, what's going to help expand you. And the worst thing we can do then is get defensive of why I can do it on my own and I don't need anybody else. Come on, Liz, you are more in